Welcome to part two of our conversation with Bobby Soto, and thank you for coming to have part two. We had such an in-depth feeling of it was like almost like a movie, part one, mm-hmm. just getting a feeling of your background and your journey to acting. And I guess I'd like to, I have questions, but do you have anything else you want to pick up from where we left off?
Thank you for having me.
Oh,
I'm excited to get back into it and see what comes out mm-hmm. and let the subconscious speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what we'll talk about next, but I'm excited.
Okay. Well, I think your raw hunger for substance in how you spend your day, the dreams that you have, that life very early on made it clear to you what substance is in yourself, in other people. I'd love to know how you were able to focus to get to where you are now as a working actor. What kind of lessons did you learn or disciplines did you develop? Because I think a lot of people who want to act, the upheaval and trauma of their life is in a way their treasure chest and their mm-hmm. where they're pulling from, but it can crush you.
Yes.
The same thing that is your treasure chest is the same thing that can crush you.
Right. That's exactly true. So we have to keep the lock and key very close by, just to let it out to play when it's necessary. I think in my life personally, I've let those emotions and those memories and those parts of myself run rampant. And so they've taken me to places where I have to sit my ass down and like really think. And I've been blessed. I think I like to say that I'm this bowling ball going down this bowling alley. But, you know, when kids don't know how to bowl, you pick the two little gates up. And sometimes the bowling ball steers to the left and it hits the little gate. And then it comes right back on the aisle. And now it's going down the alley again. And sometimes to me, that to me is spirit or source or God or creator. Something keeps taking me into the direction I need to go in. And it's about finding mentors like yourself that I found, people I can connect with. And usually, well, not usually, but I've been able to find people that I can absorb wisdom and knowledge about life. Because I was never guided by my parents or anyone in my life. My mother at a young age asked me, what do you want to be? And then from there, I took that question and ran with it with, okay, where's my answer? What do I want to be? Who am I? What does this all mean? I knew for a fact as a little kid and all the trauma and drama that was happening around me that there was something else outside of my household, outside of the neighborhood I was in, the community. I always knew there was something else. I didn't know what. And I followed that something else. And I was lucky enough to be in an acting class at a young age where that thing would express itself and I was able to say, oh, maybe that's the thing. That's the thing right there. I don't know what it is, but that thing I'm chasing, that thing I want. So I kept going for it and I kept looking for it and I kept asking questions. And then I'll, you know, read plays or in my off time, a lot of the time I would go to Samuel French and just pick up a play. And just read a play. Unfortunately, now that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. I heard from some other people that they're going to the public library.
Wow.
When Samuel French was closing and we were all grieving, a young woman came to my class and said that she now goes to the public library. And wow. So I thought I'd put that out there.
That's amazing. Now I'm going to go to the public library. I didn't know where people were going. I was actually wondering myself because there's times where you have a lot of downtime and the best thing to do I've found for myself is read something mm-hmm. that I'm interested in. And I've been into a lot of these books you recommended actually. when I met you, I was like, brain candy, click, what is on there? Click, looked all the YouTube videos, started following the books, or, you know, everything from Susan Batson's Truth to Adler's or Strasberg's books. Or
See, he's referring, Bobby is referring to a page on my website.
Yes.
It's called Brain Candy. And over the years, I just add to the YouTubes and I add to the books. And so it's kind of an archive now of a play area for emerging actors.
Yes, and it's highly, I highly recommend it. I actually, people that I meet throughout the years, when they tell me they want to be an actor or they are interested in acting, I always recommend them to your website.
Thank you. Then the website is doozestudio.com.
Mm-hmm. And the conversation within myself with this question of what, I think it's the biggest philosophical question, is what am I doing here? And what is my purpose? And what does this all mean?
Mm-hmm.
These questions I ask myself a lot, and so I go, I literally, I'm always looking for someone to help me answer the question, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how it led me to Paris, or that's how it led me to your class, or that's how it led me to the dojo. And I met a sensei, and, you know, I trained there for a few years, and, you know.
Do you think sensei would want a plug? Should we say the name of the dojo?
Yes, his name is Richard Alexander Mosqueda. And he's RMMA, and it's off of Sunset and Echo Park.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He's a great human being, and he's really about just life, learning, and lessons.
Mm-hmm.
People like him in my life have kept me sane, have kept me grounded, have checked me. I don't know. For some reason, I need, like, I think growing up, I guess I never had that. I didn't have someone go, you know, do this or do that or come and do it. I just had my mom drop me off in an acting class and I had to figure out myself. And then, so now I look for people that can be able to guide me and give me some kind mm-hmm. of knowledge about something. That's one of the biggest things I highly recommend people to do, actors especially, because a lot of times we're left with our own emotions or mm-hmm. our memories or our trauma, whatever it is, and we're left alone to deal with it. And so when you have someone you can talk to, someone that can guide you and flow it in a creative way. Mm-hmm. How do you put that and make something out of it? Mm-hmm. That's one of the greatest things a friend of mine said. Bobby, we went on a hike and he goes, man, I'm sorry you have like a lot of shit you're telling me, but how about you write something with it? And then I just like, you think so? He's like, yeah, just write. Like, go write it. And I was like, you're right. And then I went home and for about 2 weeks and I wrote something and I wrote a play. Actually,
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I wrote a play. I wrote a 65 page play and I was immersed in Curse of the Starving Class. Is that Beckett or Sam Shepard? No, I think it's Sam Shepard. It's a play that I was reading a lot, and then I just started stealing from its structure and started stealing from its, you know, it's like, I started asking questions and what's the seed of all of their pain, and they just, this is generational traumas. And I'm like, man, I'm going through these things. Everyone in my household is trying to get out alive. Like, there's a lot of trauma in my home. Like, how can I add all this to something creative? And mm-hmm. then I took myself to a room and wrote something. Mm. 65 pages, pretty good. But I, you know, haven't published anything yet, but it's something that I'm proud of. And I'm like, hey. And it made me feel better,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so these things can really help us in between our off time from jobs.
Right.
Invest in ourselves, write something about what we know. That's right. You know, the writer's rule is like, just write what you know.
Yes.
So I've written a lot of things that I'm going through in my life, but I would never say that right now that they're exceptional, you know, ready to be made, but who knows? But there's things that interest me, and then I'm like, I'm just gonna let this out.
Well, it's interesting to know that you paint, you write.
Yes.
I know you're an athlete.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. Yes. Jiu-jitsu and swimming. And,
yeah. Yeah. So, did you feel that? Did anyone give you feedback telling you that you were going to lead a big life? That you were going to be in the spotlight in any way, or lead a life outside of the bubble that you were brought up in?
Actually, yes. When I was a kid and when we joined these acting classes, my mother's a huge part of my life and the journey. But my mother gave me a piece of paper and a pen one day, and she was laying on her bed. And I remember she said, "Do you know how to spell your name in cursive, like a signature?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Practice, because one day you're going to have to sign your name for many people." And then I was like, "Really?" She's like, "Yeah." So practice. So I got a paper and I just started, "How do you do it?" And she showed me how she did hers. And so then I started like signings, like my signature. How am I doing my signature with a B, like big B, big J, big A, I don't know. Like how do I, and I just tried all these different forms. And then even to this day, every time I sign my name, I go, "Is that how I'm going to continue signing my name?" Like, I need to have a specific thing because I change it all the time. But it's like now I have this, it's like a B, a big B, a uh-huh. S, and like it goes into like a T, but then I drop down, I make a circle and I put a cross through it. I don't know why. I'm doing like this whole like thing. I'm like
channeling something.
Yeah, just like, you know, put some good energy into this piece of paper.
I've seen your signature. I like it.
Thank you. But that was one of the first things. And then, and I guess that's a thing that I carried. And I signed to this day everything I do. And I remember that. My mother was a very big, you know, a lot of times in auditions, I didn't want to go. I was like, "I'm not going to the audition. I don't want to go there." Mm-hmm. And my mom would be like, "You need to go." And she'd drop my ass on. She would drop me off to this auditions and be like, "You're gonna do it." And then I used to be like, "I don't wanna do it. I don't wanna do this anymore." And she was like, "I don't care, you're going to do it." So my mother really, really, and then,
disciplined you.
Oh yeah, hardcore. And then I remember one day I was in a studio here in Hollywood, and there was a lot of audition rooms and a lot of different actors from different parts. And I was sitting there as a teenager, and I looked at this older guy. There's like a lot of older actors. And I looked at my mom and I go, "See, Mom, that's why I don't want to continue this thing. Because I don't know where I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be old and no one know who I am. And I want, don't think like that," she says. "If you think like that, then you're going to be like that. Don't think like that. Think the opposite, stupid." And then she smacked me in my head. And I was like, "All right, you're right." You know? But like, you know, these, like, I was always veering off somewhere, you know, doing uh-huh. something to find myself if I wasn't acting or something as a teenager. But now as an adult, you know, I've come to a place where if I'm not working, okay, Bobby, how do I ground myself? Who do I hang around with? When I met my manager at Anonymous, he said to me, "This is a journey for the rest of your life. You chose this. So be patient. There's no rush." Mm-hmm. "You have all the time." Mm-hmm. And I go, "Oh, you're so right. I mean, yeah, you're so right." And then I signed with him because mm-hmm. of that conversation. Because it was the first time someone in Hollywood told me, like, "This is, what are you rushing for? What are you trying to achieve? Like, just chill out. Just relax. You're going to get everything you want, you know?" Just the excitement of walking into an audition and not knowing who your audience is going to be, not knowing how they're going to react. You know, I fed off of that energy. I was the adrenaline's rushing in the waiting room, you know, I'm like running up and down, my energy, my heartbeat's going, I'm like, "Oh man, I'm about to perform." And now today it's like, how do you find that energy at home? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? And I think the way I can do it is by, you got to now break out of your rhythm or break out of your habits and call the friend that you normally don't call because you're embarrassed of performing in front of him or her. You know, and the perform in front of them, you know, mm-hmm. but we can get caught up in these audition tapes now because they're like, "Oh, I have control of it." And it's great mm-hmm. because now you want to send your best work so you can do it as many times as you want, mm-hmm. which is also great. I think mm-hmm. that's a new thing to look at the brighter side of it is like mm-hmm. you have control of what you want to present as your work mm-hmm. and you can do it with whoever you want, wherever you want, however you want, which is also great. Mm-hmm. I have a friend that plays with the camera. He doesn't sit behind a wall and light the camera. He just gives you the phone and he goes, "Record me, walk with me." And, okay, so I have lines in one hand and the phone in the other hand, and I'm just trying to track him as he runs around. And he books a lot and he works a lot.
For real, mm-hmm. doing that mm-hmm. while during his audition. So there's a lot of movement in it.
Oh, yeah, he's doing a whole scene. Like he does the scene, you know, like he does the scene. If he's like making chicken and he's going through cabinets, having a conversation over the counter, like we'll shoot it. you know, and he's like
in his kitchen.
In his kitchen, and shit. Yeah, and then one time he did something where he was laying on the ground, and like, you know, lies of days ago, and just like dreamlike. It was very beautiful, and I was recording him above as he was on the ground doing his scene. Yeah, and he's booked a lot, and now he's making millions of dollars, you know, for the way that he operates in his audition tapes, which is beautiful. And so I think nowadays, even though COVID, you know, what's great is also you can sign up for as many classes as you want. You have all the, like, you know, no one's at really at work. You're at home working, so you can be in as many things to keep yourself active.
Yeah.
And acting classes, thinking about acting classes, the hardest thing is like, how do you, like you said, how do you grab people nowadays and put them in a room? You know, everyone's either COVID, you know.
Times have changed. COVID has changed, as we're saying, auditions. And I, as a, like when I was younger, I auditioned for a movie called The Last Tycoon with Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
And Ilya Kazan directed that movie. And it was for a small part in the movie. But I auditioned directly in the room with Ilya Kazan.
Wow.
For real.
Wow.
And one of my friends actually got in the movie, but in at that time, auditions were to see if you wanted to work with the person.
Yes.
To see if they had the, and as you were saying earlier, the energy of the character.
Yes.
And that you wanted to then develop it. And now it's become abundantly clear to me that actors have to go to the audition with a complete performance, kind of like you're describing your friend sending in a short movie.
Yes. The scene.
Yeah. And so it part of me is clinging to, no, that's not the way, but then that is the way because that's what people are doing now.
That's right.
And so it's been an interesting journey for me to say, how do I, I'm constantly asking, how do I take love of acting as a pathway to greater self understanding?
That's right. Yeah, to piggyback off of that, I mean, as an actor, you grab the character synopsis, and then you have a breakdown of the script. They tell you all the info of who's directing, who's producing, which name's here, and this and that. It's more of information on that than there is on your character.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
that's my point.
Yeah. So, like, as an actor's mind, you know, you have to start developing a business-like mind, also a poetically inclined mind, which is the questions I ask it, how am I going to perform this character? What parts of myself am I going to tap into? Who do I need to call, Shelly? I need to work on this. I'm having trouble tapping into this. And then the other side of my mind goes, okay, who's directing? What's their tone? What kind of movies or shows have they done? Can I watch something now so I can get their tone? Also, who's producing? Because the producers are now in control, right? So it's like, who's producing? What have they done? What are they into? What are they trying to promote? Who are they representing? And are they the kind of producers that you can kind of tell that they're going to allow the director to have their collaborative power, or they're going to control that chain? And then you go, okay, and who else is cast in it? Oh, they have this actor, that actor. Okay, so I can fill out the tone you start seeing what kind of actors are also casting, because every actor is different, and you start seeing which one you want to work with. Do I really want to work with so-and-so? And, you know, is this a job I'm going to take for money? Is this a job? So those things are all business-like, thoughts that run through my mind. But then you got to go through, like, okay, how do I find the most depth in myself to bring out for this character? And all it says is he's cool, he's a smart guy, he's cute, he's like all these things you can't act. You know what I mean? So it's like, where do you find it? And then the work you do is like, let's look into the writer's mind. You know, let's find out what they're trying to convey with even the directions. You know, what are they trying to say? And then you tap into that and you start working on that and find it in yourself and connecting with it. And that's the best. And, you know, you have to really, I think you've said this once, where Rachel McAdams, her audition tape on YouTube, which if you, for The Notebook, mm-hmm. changed the game, because then you see her come in fully prepared.
In an audition.
And then you see her just living, you know. Or you can look at the kid from E.T. Mm-hmm. and Spielberg is working with him, and you see him just living. Of course, that's a kid. Like, how'd you, what? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dang, you know, unfortunately, when we grow up, we start losing those parts of ourselves, mm-hmm. unless we stay creative and active our whole life, which is pretty tough in this society. Well,
something that I can share, and I think you know this about me already, but in the context of the podcast, mm-hmm. is I am always looking for the universal in the personal. Mm-hmm. And often, all the time, I see it. And once I see the universal, even in some sides, mm-hmm. then that's like those are my night goggles. Mm-hmm. Then I can see all this stuff that can be built.
That's right.
But before that, it just is what it looks like to everybody. One way I trained myself to read scripts and get a sense of the vibe quickly, or where I stood in relation to the script, mm-hmm. is it might offend some people, but I think it was before Harvey Weinstein had his problems. But I was reading some article, and he mentioned that The English Patient was the most beautiful script he had ever read. Mm. And, you know, you can get scripts online, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. almost any script. And I got it immediately, and I read the script. Mm. And I, of course, I've already seen the movie, but the way that the script is written is enchanting.
Wow.
And it made me realize that the people who do write scripts, it's for such a small audience, mm-hmm. that's going to experience it as literature. Mm-hmm. And then you, there was a moment where you got picked up by CAA, mm-hmm. and they gave you about 12 or yes. more incredible scripts that yes. that I also read with you. And it was after I had done this English Patient exercise, mm-hmm. and it was amazing. With some of these scripts, I was completely mm-hmm. lost in it, as if I mm-hmm. I can't even tell if I saw the movie or read the script now.
I remember it was the 7-5.
Yes.
About the police department in New York.
Did anyone ever make that movie?
No, they never made it.
That is an amazing, whoever you ever listening to this, my God, that script was amazing. And then some of the other ones who I don't remember their name, they just didn't, I didn't fall in love, you know? Mm-hmm. And so
there's one actually that you can check out that they gave me, which was made by, they gave two other actors as well, but Little Fish.
Oh, right. You told me about that.
Yes, with Jack O'Connell. And I believe, I want to say.
I got to see that one. I'm going to see that tonight.
Or Olivia Cook. One of them.
Okay.
I think Olivia Cook. But that movie, whoa. When I remember we read the script and you're like, this one's good.
Oh,
and that was one of the yeah, it was like three out of like the 9 or 10 that they gave me.
Yeah,
that you're like, these are good here. And I remember, and then I recently seen it, and I said, it's on Amazon, and I said, wow, this one, whoa, this was amazing. Yeah,
okay, yeah. I gotta watch. I'm glad I called it out propererly. Well, good. So another, can we switch areas? Because I want to ask you on,
of course,
on set. Mm-hmm. What do you do on set with the chaos of tech people and makeup and all that? What do you do to keep yourself where you want to be?
I listen to music. That's like the most basic thing I can do is I play my music. If I don't call you, I'm literally sitting in my trailer, having water, listening to my music. I breathe in my belly. I pull out my ears, a couple of kinesiology
things
that you taught me. Mm-hmm. I try my best to conserve energy, not to make small talk. The more, and some people on set have called me mysterious or like this, like, oh, this guy doesn't say much, you know, he's like to himself, but it has nothing to do with other people. Are going to talk all the time. Mm-hmm. Crew, cast, they want to chit chat, get to know each other. And it's fine. That's okay. But I'm about to get on the screen and I need to have full energy. I'll tell you this, the other, I was working on a project, and
yeah, you have to be discreet.
Yeah, I was working on a project, and I had, you know, my character was gonna walk in, and that's it, just walk in and walk out and stand. And the night before, I chose to stay up late, so then I give it to Sam. I have time to sleep. I'm only standing. It's fine. This is what I did. I get to the standing point, and there's a whole scene happening, and I'm standing. Director says, "You stand here on this wall." I say, "Okay." And I start getting really tired, extremely tired, where I'm like, my eyes are dozing off. I'm like breathing, like I'm like falling asleep as the camera's rolling. And I'm like waking myself up, and I'm, oh shit, Bobby, you just messed up, man. And then I said, wait a minute, this is actually a really good character choice, because maybe my guy is strung out on some heroin or something, and maybe my guy is stood up all night and he's just here just doing his job, but he has nothing. So I tried to switch it. I was like, how do I take what's happening with me and create the character and like justify it? You know, I never fell asleep, but I did. I was dozing off in the back, like, oof, what's happening? And then I just made the creative decision to go, oh, okay. But that was a big, like, okay, Bobby, this is one in the million, and that's it. Like, you shouldn't do this with your career. Like, it's just, what are you doing? But, you know, I literally was on set for maybe an hour. Like, it was, they just needed me to walk in. Mm. That was it. So it was an easy day, but also a learning curve for myself. Mm. Yeah. But maybe, I don't know, maybe we could cut that out.
I could.
No, it's fine.
I could. I will cut that out then. What else?
Also, yes. What's a good thing is collaborating with a director. Mm. That's a really, really good, that's a key point on sets. Because directors, usually, if it's not a television show, the director controls the tone and he sets the tone and the lead actors. And if I like to get on set, look for the director, introduce myself if I haven't met them yet, ask them how's their day going, however, and then, you know, try to make a little bit of an introduction. I liked your work. I saw your film. I'm a big fan. I did this actually to a director named Amat Escalante, who did a movie called Heli that was with a one at Cannes in 2017, I believe. He came up to me and he says to me, I'm a big fan. Bobby, I'm a big fan. I go, really? I'm a big fan. And he goes, no, I'm a big fan. And I go, really? Why do you say that? He's like, I've seen your dailies and I've seen your work and I really like you, man. And he starts going into how he's a big fan of the brown community, the Chicano mm-hmm. community in Los mm-hmm. Angeles. He starts going into how he believes it's not represented enough in the industry. He mm-hmm. says how he's watched the movie American Me with Eric James Olmos mm-hmm. thousands of times, and he wants to do something with that community. So he's like, I want to work with more people like you. And he's Mexican from Mexico, but speaks perfect English and everything.
Would you mind talking about what it was like to work with Michael Shannon? Because that was a big eye-opener for you, I think.
Oh, huge. Michael Shannon was amazing. I remember getting there on set. Flew in next day. I had 3 days worth of three scenes a day, which was 9 scenes in total for 3 days. All of my dramatic and huge scenes for the character. And that's like my first scene. And it's with Shannon. And I'm like, oh, shit. What am I going to get myself into today? Just got to go in there. Got to trust myself. Got to trust what I've done. Got to trust the work. Try something. You know, try. You've already worked. Just let it go and try. Just do something. It's already in you, right? So I'm telling myself to like calm down. And then Michael Shannon comes in. We run the scene. Cut. Director runs over to him, tells him something. Michael Shannon comes in. Action. Runs the scene. Cut. We do about 6 times. My coverage, his coverage, everything. At the end of that scene, when we got it, and they're like, all right, that's in the can. Let's move on. Shannon comes up to me. And pulls out his hand and he goes, Mike. I look at his hand, I shake his hand, I go, Bobby, nice to meet you. He walks away and I start crying. Like tears came out of my eyes. I'm like, whoa, I just worked with Shannon, one of my inspirations. And I'm like, he just recognized me after we worked. Like he didn't want to rehearse. He didn't want to, you know, like meet each other before, nothing. He's like, let's get in there, let's make it fresh, let's just go. That's what the director told me. And so then when I was prepared, I was like, okay. And he was amazing because he walked with such grace. Mm-hmm. He carried himself with so much integrity, with respect, with a lot of love, very quiet, smooth operator, just smooth. Mm. See, that's what I learned from him. To conserve your energy. Mm-hmm. Energy conservation is the best thing you can do on a set. And I remember doing kinesiology. I was doing, and I felt the little fan in me trying to grab his attention. Mm-mm-mm. I felt the little fan in me like, oh man, I just, like I wanted him to have a conversation with me. But he was like, we run scenes. And one day I'm walking out and he's huge, you know, he's a big guy. He puts his hand on my shoulder and he just places his hand very gently and he just relaxed all of my tension. I was like, whoa, all of my tension went away because he carries himself so peaceful. Like you couldn't find, like he'll be in his room just laying there in the dark. And then they call them and get up, walk to set. Very, very nice guy, like a great human being. And then I was doing kinesiology on a chair. I was just messing with my meridians. And then he looks over and he says, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, nice. The first time I get to have a conversation. We're working this whole movie and we haven't really talked. And then I'm like, oh, it's called kinesiology. It's just something to balance me out and center me. And it's really easy. He's like, what do you do? And he placed it here, and I just started teaching it. Oh, nice. And then he started joking around. I was like, oh, cool. Like, he just something lit his day up. I don't know. He's always, but you would walk, I would watch him walk away from like a cut. All right, let's wrap that scene up. Walking away, and he just gently, like a lion of the jungle, just calmly walking. So I'm like, I want that. I want to be able to walk on a set and just be chill.
It sounds like he was aware of his leadership position.
100%. He knew exactly that he was the one that people were looking up to, and he set the tone. He knew exactly the power that he held as an actor. Mm-hmm. You know, he knew it, yeah, and he really took care of everyone. Like with that, he was gracious. So nice. And he made a joke once. We were doing a scene and he's holding, like he's like a cop and I'm running away from him. And as we're running away, he goes, if I hold you any longer, people are going to think that we're dating. And I was like, and I remember laughing. It's so funny. It's just the funniest thing. I was like, what? You have jokes, dude? Like, this is funny. Like, you just discover him slowly. Like, you just slow. Like, I believe you got to learn how to, you know, you don't know. You got to trust people. You just take your time and, you know, patience. You know, he was just somebody that really, I really looked up to. I mean, I took that. I went and I worked on another show and something else. And then I was like, okay, how do I incorporate that in my life? How do I keep my integrity throughout all the chaos on set? Mm-hmm. Throughout all the people wanting to, of course, I'm not Shannon yet, where people want to get up to him. You can tell people would come up all the time, want to have a conversation about his shoes or like the chocolate on the craft table. Like he just looks, things just to get his attention. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, shoes are nice, you know, like chocolate's good, like that's it. And he wouldn't say more. And then you'd be like, okay. And then you knew, like, walk away, you know, like there's no need for, like, he's working, like he's trying to conserve his energy. And so I would take that to this. I went to a very chaotic Netflix set, chaotic chaos in the sense of there's so many moving parts, and I just try my best to keep my integrity throughout all the politics of the show and keep my respect for myself and not try to stoop to anyone's level with whatever comments or belief system that they're running there.
In my approach to working with young actors and people coming up, young actresses, I get really excited about sharing the history with you guys. And I know with a lot of young people, you know, I hope that the young people are connecting the joy of knowing whose shoulders you're standing on. And we live in such a social media society where everyone is comparing what they do, asking themselves, do I look like them? And where I'm trying to turn the attention is, what is the bigger idea that they were seeking that was behind what they were doing? What is that bigger idea? So even when somebody's doing an audition, and I know that there's an element in the audition that is personal to them, I will say, let's dedicate it. Let's dedicate this audition to a bigger idea outside of yourself. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. And I'm hoping that this does help people when they're on a TV set or on a movie set, that they're so clear on the bigger idea of why they're there, that the petty politics and the atmosphere of all the tech that's around you, the tech people are doing their tech thing and they're in a very quantitative mindset. And the actors, of course, and the actresses are in a very poetic mindset. And both have to be there to make a movie happen. But it's much easier for the quantitative left hemisphere mind to smack down the poetic side. So that's why I feel like actors need some greater context that they know they are in.
100% I heard this story once that Christopher Walken puts clothespins in his pockets, and he, when he has scenes, he has a hand in his pocket and he'll play with the clothespin, and it'll align him and center him because he's had something inside his pocket that he's focused on. For some reason, that to me turned me on, and I said, how do I put my work into something physical so that way I don't lose it when I'm in between all of this thing that's happening around me? Where can I put it that reminds me immediately once I touch it? And I chose a rock. And so when I have characters, I'll put a rock and I'll play with that rock, and every chip and edge and corner of the rock is in my pocket. And so when I have it, I'm like, okay, shit, like things are going hectic right now, or, and then you can feel the energy of the place, like people are trying to talk to you or somebody wants to be around you or just whatever. I pull out that rock and I just start fiddling with it and playing with it and reminding myself, like, oh, this edge is this, what I worked on. Oh, this over here is like something, this over here. Oh, and okay, I'm back. you know, I start playing with the rock, and I put those in my pocket all the time.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a way of reminding me to stay human and also mm-hmm. like to stay where to stay the course. Mm-hmm. And it's solid, you know, it's mm-hmm. something that I can. It's earth as well. On the day that you shoot, things change. You know, so you have to be so ready to adapt to whatever mm-hmm. happens. You know, I might work on it with you in the script. It might say he's on a chair the whole time. And then you get to set and they go, you know what? Something happened. The chair is broke. There's no chairs. We're changing locations. You're going to be standing now. And you're going to also have this clown next to you and you're holding a pair of socks in your hand and like drinking orange juice. You're going to have like, all. Why? I have to juggle. What? How do you? Okay. Center, breathe, you got this. Okay, I worked on it. I know where I'm at. I know what I'm doing. I know what I want. I did the work with my coach. Okay, Bobby, now it's time to use all of it and see with now the new circumstances and now see what happens and what mm-hmm. you create from that. Mm-hmm. And I remember actually once I was working with Shea Whigham mm-hmm. and you and I had broke down a scene, the last scene. And I remember going, I got this, and I left my folder with all of my notes in my apartment, in my place that I was sleeping at. I get to set, and I'm like, shit, I forgot. And I was like in the boondocks, like no service, no nothing. I couldn't call you. I was like in the boondocks. I was like, oh, man. And then I remember working on that scene with Shay, and we're doing it, and the director was giving me a note. Mm-hmm. And mind you, the circumstances were wild. We're in a swamp. The sun is beaming. We're in a tin little boat. I'm under a gray tarp. I have metal reel handcuffs around my wrist. Like, the circumstances are insane. You could never play this out in class. Like, this mm-hmm. is like... This is the real deal.
You're on your own.
I'm on my own. And I'm with Shay. And I have... It's a huge scene. And for some reason, we were dehydrated. We were going through this a lot. And for some reason, I don't know. I was like, fuck, I don't know what's happening right now. She's like, well, I don't know what's happening to me. And Shay looks over to me, like, whisper. And I go, oh, you're right. Okay, whisper, yeah. And then I remember whispering. And then I took the note he gave me. He like hooked me up. He looked at me and saw, okay, he needs something. And then I gave it, you know, we were working together and he became one of the collaborative teachers and mentors in the moment as he's acting. And, you know, so he's, that's great that I had someone like him to come in, like in the, like right there. He saw I needed something, gives me a helping hand. And now I'm like, okay, I'm on my merry way again. I get back to my hotel, grab my folder, look at the notes. I'm like, all right, we shot the scene, everything. Literally, the note we worked on was whisper.
No.
Yeah, and I was like, what the fuck? What? Like, it was already in my notes to whisper on this specific line. And then I'm like, oh, man, this is wild. And then I was like, I never again will I leave my folder in
well,
the hotel.
Well, hey, you got the message anyway.
Yeah, so. It came through. It came through.
Yeah,
source
it doesn't
is like,
matter.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I like the story of Eleonora Duse, where she would read, I think, St. Augustine's mm-hmm. book, right? And in her corner of her room. And then, you know, and if she felt the inspiration, she'd go out there and work. If she didn't, she would have to call it off, right?
That, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read that in the book, The Mystic in the Theater.
Mystic in the Theater. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I'm not sure how many times that happened, but I know for sure that she did that. And I'm like, wow. Okay. And nowadays, you can't call it off. Like, you gotta work. There's a million. You're gonna get replaced in a millisecond. There's someone else waiting for you.
Well, you know what's interesting in the time of Sarah Bernhardt and Duse, mm-hmm. they owned their own theater companies. So when they called it off, it was on themselves.
Ah, okay. They were okay.
They were the producer and mm-hmm. the director.
I like the story of her putting her. I like that she was giving up, like she was opening up a channel for source or spirit or mm-hmm. angels or whatever to come in and take a part of the creation in the moment of when she was of her performances.
I think the private part of her was really the engine she felt that's the engine of what I bring on stage.
Mm.
And I think she was, in the book at least, Mystic in the Theater and other books I've read, she was very clear that part of our bandwidth is taken up with who we are in our public persona. But for her, it's everything else beyond that is mm-hmm. where the performance is going to come from. Mm-hmm. And I think with dramatic art, whether it's on stage or in film, the wires can get crossed.
Mm-hmm.
And that the private part of you is so delicate that it's mm-hmm. the last thing you want to drag out in front of a movie camera.
Right, right.
It's the last thing you want to do, but your intellect or your own opinion is, but that's the part that's the most interesting.
Right.
And so reconciling that our public persona is going, oh my God, don't do that. And then your artistic side is going, that's exactly what you should do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to say it here sitting at a table with microphones.
Right.
But when you've got a director and other actors and tech people to still have the courage in modern times to take Deuce's lead,
mm-hmm,
to take
mm-hmm.
that lead and do that. And I feel that you are doing that, and that the people that are so inspiring, I honestly marvel mm-hmm. at the ability for so many artists, performing mm-hmm. dramatic artists on film, to carry this forward.
Mm-hmm. It's about doing the work and really doing the work. What does that mean? Take the time to put in the time to really work on your craft, work on the lines, work on the script, just research as much as you can, do everything that you can. But we live today in a society where everything is instant. But there is hope, and there is dreams are still alive. There are the people at the top that understand what it means to work with artists and creatives mm-hmm. and understand what poetry is in a script. They know. People at the top, a lot of them know. They know what's good. They know what's poetry. They know what's not. And mm-hmm. they know what's money. Mm-hmm. They know. So it's just the new generation that's more of like they're on set, and a lot of the time, they're talking to everyone. Like they're just here to say the lines. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to stand on my mark and say my line. I am the girl. I am the guy. Like, I do know that life. Like, I get it. Like, I'm going to just react,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah, great. And it looks good. And if you have somebody that can paint you well, nice. But if you want to dig deeper, if you want to mm-hmm. go further in yourself and pull out parts of yourself and look for that private part of yourself to be revealed and have the power and the courage to do that, man, what else can you do? Like, whoa, you know, it's a ricochet effect.
Yeah.
And I aspire to do that. And I know that there's a lot of people, like, everyone wants to be Daniel Day-Lewis. Everyone wants to be Meryl Streep. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know that they put in so much work into their craft. They look so easy and simple but they're at home, you know, they're tearing that script apart, or they're like, whatever the character, how he walks, how he talks, how he moves, how he carries himself, like the way he ties his shoes, like what he eats for dinner, what he eats for lunch, like where does he exercise, who is his friend, like all of these questions mm-hmm. you usually work on, like these things that it's really hard to find in another class or with another human being here in Hollywood, because mm-hmm. you know, in Hollywood, it's just, let's make money. It's a money factory.
But that does make money at the end of the day.
Yes, that makes the most money, because when you captivate an audience, guess what? They want to see you again.
Exactly.
And so then you can, then you're marketable, exactly. Now you're sellable. Like, what do you want? More, more, more. And that's exactly.
It's a real joy for me to be collaborating with you and other people and finding a language to connect to where so many different people, different levels of people that I encounter. And Yeah, I'm actively trying to take the intimidation factor out of what is known as method acting, or I prefer to call it experiential acting. It's my new name for method acting.
I like it, actually.
Experiential, and rather than presentational.
I like it. I like experience. Experiment. How do you say it?
Experiential.
Experiential. Sorry.
Experimental.
Experimental.
And no, and I actually, you know, we haven't mentioned Slauson at all, but
that's fine. Yeah.
But
we can.
We should wrap up soon. But
okay.
But that did liberate me. With that idea of working backwards, like what is in the room today? What is in people's souls today? What's happening today? What word captures what's up for you right now? What are your headlines?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's make a story from what, let's see if there's a theme in the room of all of us. And
right.
What's the story of that theme? That right. really liberated me, woke me up.
Right.
As much as there were a lot of wavering moments, the intent of that, and reading that book by Moise Kaufman,
yes. Moment Work.
Moment Work, yeah. I will put links on the page
yes.
to the things we're referring to.
Please.
For the listeners. But
that's right. That was the first thing exercise we went through in Slauson.
It felt very pure and clean at that point.
Whatever you, whatever you're feeling, if you need to get something off, just out of your system, how can you create that in a shape with your body?
Mm-hmm.
How can you tell us a story with that?
Mm-hmm. A movement.
That's mm-hmm. it. That's amazing.
And then. That whole process that Moise Kaufman came up with that we were able to do in yes. such a big experiment.
Yes.
For someone like me, that was really just shook me to free myself. And I could be a student. That was the other thing, is I could get out in the circle if I wanted to. I didn't feel the pressure to be... I wasn't responsible. I was volunteering, mm-hmm. so I wasn't being paid. So mm-hmm. I got the benefit of participating
mm-hmm.
Freely and fully. And that then we had COVID,
mm-hmm.
and coming back now, I am running with that freedom. Nice. So I don't know what kind of a class I have now, because I can't go back. I can't go back to how it was a little more formal.
Mm-hmm. I remember it was very sharp.
My class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very sharp. And I'm sure it still is. It's
sharp in the sense that I don't want to be bored.
Yes,
if I'm going to watch people for all these hours or whatever, I want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, engaging to me. And I know that people can't be engaging, so I'm sharp in that way.
I respect the position of an acting teacher so much, because you have to work with a human being so complex, and they sometimes, majority of us, believe we know what we're doing, and we're like, I know me, how do you know? I know me, I know what I'm doing, I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the outside, you're like, well, you're doing something else, and mm-hmm. you know, I gotta be very soft and easy with you and inspire you to move this way and shape shift over here and mm-hmm. do things like that. You know, and that's very, it's like people's egos and people's, you know, sensitivities are out, their insecurities are out. So it's like, it's yes. a lot to take on. It's a lot
and
to take on.
I'm mindful, because I'm gratefully working with a lot of people who are working. And
yes,
I'm aware that they're the one that's they're going on set. They're the one that's going to take this out into the world.
That's right.
And now I have confidence that I've worked with so many people who are working, but I don't have a lot of time in front of filming in a camera myself. I'm more stage work, and that's kind of where my happy place is. But yeah.
And someone recently asked me, what's the difference between film and theater? And I said, as an older man, I said, well, in film, you can go to your trailer and take a nap. That's it. That's yeah. it for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
For me, like when you're on set, you better be having the, I'm like check in. Like mm-hmm. there's you have to money's on the line. People mm-hmm. are watching you. Your face, mm-hmm. which you can never change, it's gonna be on screen forever because film mm-hmm. is forever. And so, what are you gonna do? Mm-hmm. You know, you only have these one shots all the time. And so I was like, yeah, in theater you don't get that liberty. You don't go in the back and go to sleep. No, you better continue the show, and you can't pull out. So it's mm-hmm. that much more intense.
Yeah, the rigor of it turns me on. I like the zen focus of it. I like the just the rigor of it. And so I'm bringing that together in mm-hmm. my a creative work with working artists in TV and film. But it's again as a coach, I'm learning new ways of interacting and still keeping the bar where I have it.
Nice.
And Slauson was a big part of freeing me in a way that I guess I don't have I can't really articulate fully, but and lockdown, you know, I just feel so grateful to be in a room with people. I was teaching on Zoom, but I just think it's on Zoom it kind of pushes you more into representational acting.
Of course.
And so I'm using a lot of poetry and stuff mm-hmm. like, you know, I do. But coming out of COVID, something I've been reading and hearing from other young people mm-hmm. is they're feeling that life is speeding up right now.
Wow.
Life is speeding up. Like we're opening our doors, we're re-engaging, and people are a little disoriented.
Wow.
And a little overwhelmed after having to be quiet and slow and at home. And so I feel like, you know, you were just kind of in lockdown in Mexico City mm-hmm. filming.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll tell you one thing, though. I did get COVID. And I hid myself in a cabin in the snow for about 2 weeks and until it passed over. But once I got COVID, it sucks, but I was able to go, you know what? I beat this thing. It's not going to end me. I can continue living and not be afraid. And that fear factor of COVID and not getting COVID was gone. And I said, well, I just got to be more careful with myself. That's it. And take care of the people around me that I love. But then once that went away, I was able to like feel free again from this entrapment of COVID and the idea of like spreading it myself. Oh my goodness, now I have antibodies, so I'm good. But I think it was a part of like just this recent just getting it, getting over it, and then feeling better, and then not being able to be like, I'm not afraid of it anymore, has given me clarity as well. And like, okay, I can come back to normal, like my normal, you know, where I don't feel like I'm gonna infect anyone or get infected right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm still playing safe. I still wear my mask. I still use hand sanitizer, and I wash my hands and all this stuff, and I still stay safe. But I think it was a blessing in disguise where I got it and I was able to come out healthy.
Mm-hmm. And it started you on this path you're on right now, I guess.
Yes, because then I felt better with myself to go outside, to hang out with a friend, to, you know, go to a restaurant. And, you know, I was in Mexico City, but everything's outdoors. Mm-hmm. And you know, but still going to like public places, I felt all free again, the weight off my shoulders.
Yeah.
And so I felt a lot better. But and then I just started tapping into, okay, what can I, like, that fear was haunting me.
Mm.
And And then it went away. And then I was able to look, okay, I'm clear-minded now. I can, okay, what do I need for myself right now? Mm-hmm.
You know, meditate. Yeah, it's like we can dream again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it's feeling like to me. And hey, I'm starting the podcast. Yeah, so that's exactly. One of the first things I'm doing because I feel comfortable having you here. And
yes.
I know you can do this on remotely on Zoom or phone, but I felt to start it, I needed to have my guests yes. in the room with me.
Yes. And this is it. This is what we need more. It'll come back. It'll take time, but yeah. it'll come back where we have these experiences in audition rooms.
Yeah.
Meetings, whatever it is, you know, we will have this again, you know. But it's also beautiful to see everything being documented on Zoom.
Yeah.
And then it's being publicized in the world. And like you see people getting jobs now. It's being like, you know, that video of her, of the Supergirl getting her job and getting her costume was just went viral.
What's that? Supergirl?
Supergirl. They cast her on Zoom. Like she was on her Zoom call.
Oh, right.
And
he goes,
what do you think? Do you know how to fly? Fly? What are you talking about? Fly. Oh, right, and he pulls out the costume. He's like, you're Supergirl. What? You know, and you see her reaction. That's beautiful. Uh-huh. So like COVID is giving us a more intimate look into people's homes, into people's mm-hmm. life, into their career paths, whatever it is, but it's all being documented, like all of it, which is another wild thing too. Because even the self tapes that the Zoom calls, mm-hmm. they tell me make sure you have your phone recording, because if the Wi-Fi drops, you're recording, and you could send us that video. We'll be recording on our end, but you should record too.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So you like every single phone call and audition is, and that's great too, because now they just set that. There's no more an audition. It's not one. It's like they record it, they submit it to everyone. So now it's like, wow, everyone gets it instantly. They get to sign off instantly. So that's why I feel like people's jobs, you know, we're moving in through a time of reality where if I want something, it happens.
Yeah.
If I envision it, it happens.
Yeah.
That's all, girl. I saw a girl, she literally was like, we're walking into this Indian cuisine place, and she's like, oh, I want this this book. Have you seen this book, Bobby? And we're waiting in line. It's a spiritual Indian book. And I go, oh, nice. That's a really nice book. That's cool. And she's like, should I order you one? And I'm like, you know what? Get one, order one. And then and we're in line to order food at this Indian restaurant. And, you know, we're having this conversation before we even walked into this place.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'll say order one and then I'll read it with you. Okay. As we get to the cashier, the book is literally on top of the cashier's.
No.
Yeah, it's right there. It's right there. And I look at it and I go, hey, is this the book you wanted? And she goes, yeah, that's the book. What? And she looks at the cashier and she goes, I was just ordering this book. Like right now I was ordering it. And he goes, you want it? It's yours. What? Are you serious? And she's like, oh my goodness. And she takes it. And she's like, thank you so much. Wow. I'm like, say Bobby's going to get $1 million. Say Bobby's going to get $1 million right now. It's like, Bobby's going to get $1 million. I was like, okay, thanks. You know what I mean?
And well, then, that's the law of attraction if 100, I ever heard
and
about
then,
it.
Oh, my and God. In the moment. And then yeah. and then last 2 weeks ago, she's like, I'm going to work with this actress. A week later, she's on the same show as the actress. I'm going to work with so-and-so. Same week, gets the job.
Oh, like, my God.
Boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, yo, you have magical powers. And she says, no, we all have magical powers.
That is the truth.
We all can manifest like this. We're moving into a new reality where everything you want is instant. Like, you got it. Just say it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man. She's like, but you got to get grounded. You got to get clear-minded. You got to get connected to source, God, whatever you believe in. Uh-huh. Meditate, you know, be good to yourself. And then things were going to, they're going to come quick. And I'm like, oh man, this is so inspiring. Okay, cool. Okay.
Exactly. No, yeah. I'm down with all that.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do part two.
Of course.
I felt there was so much more than we got to that more today.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Of course, and anytime we'll do
Bobby part. Yes. Soto that has been holding forth and sharing with us the experience he's had blooming in his career here in LA. And all the references we made, I'm going to go through, we'll put links on the page of this website and of the podcast. And thank you all for listening. So
thank you, Shirley, for having me.
Love you.
Anytime. Love you too.
Bye.